Today's episode is a little different. We're talking about a true crime documentary series expose on stuff that probably hits close to home because you would watch a lot of these shows in the 2000s.
Yeah.
I would avoid Nickelodeon and Disney live action shows like The Plague. I liked my TV Land. I liked watching reruns of Dick Van Dyke. I was not big into Drake and Josh and that type of humor for some reason.
See, Disney Channel, Sweet Life of Zack and Cody. That was my favorite show for the longest time.
I do remember watching it over your shoulder.
The only time that I would really watch anything on Nickelodeon in the early years, and I'm saying early years, maybe 2004 to 2007, was when it was animated shows like SpongeBob SquarePants or The Fairly Odd Parents or something like that.
I enjoyed the cartoons more so, and it feels like nowadays there's a lot more cartoons out there kids-related. Wise than there are live action shows.
Yes, also Back at the Barnyard. I used to watch that when they decided to make that a TV series.
But the show about a male cow.
Yeah, a cow and a farm.
Yes, but
and him
male
running the place. It was
cow.
Based off of, it was based off the Kevin James movie.
Sure.
But during the late 2000s, that's when I really started to watch a lot of Nickelodeon live action and kind of stayed away from Disney, the Zoe 101s, Victorious, iCarly. And then Drake and Josh actually didn't watch until after that show ended because they started to make these like two made-for-TV movies that kind of were based off of what happened after the series finale. And then they would, for promotion, play the Drake and Josh marathons. And then I started watching that, and I started to really enjoy that.
I just know that the kid, the girl from iCarly, was the sister.
Miranda
and then before
Cosgrove.
That, she was in School of Rock.
Yes.
And then they made School of Rock into a television show. By the mid-2010s, that's when people really see like the takeoff of streaming and also the cliff for Nickelodeon. If this series did anything to depress me, because I didn't watch it, I just did the research for it.
Right.
But it just made it so evident that Nickelodeon is dying. It is done. Like, do you know what the shows are? We've covered them in a few other podcasts. So we've done Sydney to the Max, Rebel Day. We've talked about old Nickelodeon. But the shows from like nowadays, Warped, That Girl Lele, Tyler Perry's Young Dylan in its fourth season, Aaron and Aaron, all of these shows have below a 6 on IMDb. Some of them are in the 2s or 3s. It really seems like they've hit a cliff and everything is being targeted away from live action towards cartooning. And you have to wonder if maybe the best of times, worst of times, early 2000s and the beginning of 2010s that people really connected the Dan Schneider era.
Yeah, they refer to the mid 2000s.
If that's the reason why.
Yeah, they refer to the mid 2000s when they're talking about Victorious, Zoe 101, and all the live action as the golden age of Nickelodeon.
And I mean, I would argue that there are people from the 90s and people were watching it even into the 80s where Nickelodeon really grew and took off who are watching Double Dare and what was the show before all of that that made it? So this can't be on TV or something
yes,
like that?
Yes, right.
Like all of those type of shows, I feel like could have also been part of the golden age because they ushered in this other strong part of it. But I don't think that it's fair to say that in the mid 90s, they didn't have quite the control.
The Amanda Show started in 1999. Mm-hmm. And I think that that brought a huge audience along with it.
But that was Dan Schneider's first show, right?
No, all that was actually Dan Schneider's first show.
My mistake. Yes. So when did all that start?
1994.
Okay. So he was there pretty early on to the scripted format. I still think Double Dare and the slime and all that stuff when that was introduced was kind of the heart of when Nickelodeon really became Nickelodeon.
Well, they start to talk about Dan Schneider, kind of his background. And I think that he had a few acting roles and that then that really brought him into Nickelodeon. And then, when all that hit, it was just a huge success. And it was almost like everything he touched in terms of TV shows, even going into like the mid-2000s or late 2000s, it seemed like it was gold. They touched upon the Disney versus Nickelodeon thing that was happening in the mid-2000s, and they even said that Schneider was their
Nickelodeon
answer.
Had already won, and then Disney started to push back with their content,
yes.
And then you're saying Dan Schneider was the response to that. Keep in mind, though, Nickelodeon had things like The Last Airbender. They were still being pretty creative.
Yes.
It was around the time of SpongeBob, though, I think when they were like, well, we're going to veer away from just being this totally independent niche away from Disney Network to kind of trying to brand and merchandise everything.
And it's crazy when you think about SpongeBob, because I remember the movie, which I saw when I was like five years old in theaters.
Mm-hmm.
That was supposed to be the end to the series. And now it's what's still going on. It's like 22nd season or something.
I think it's the most watched cartoon program of all time, even beating The Simpsons at this point. Not the longest running, but the most watched.
And Jimmy Neutron, that was another show that I always liked.
But the thing about Nickelodeon is it's always been split off between, there was Toon Nick, right?
Yes.
And now there's Teen Nick, and then there's Nick at Night, and then there's Nickelodeon, right? Mm-hmm. And all the three top channels for them have been falling down. The Nick Jr., Teen Nick, or sorry, Nickelodeon and Nick at Night have all dropped off over the last 10 years precipitously, just like with Disney and everything else that's not streaming. And the only one that's raising is Teen Nick right now. But you look at Nick at Night, that used to be like their real like undercover winning formula, right?
I remember they had Family Matters, which they kept promoting when they first got, I think, the rights for that. They also did Everybody Hates Chris. There were some other ones that I can't think of right now.
Do you know what they're doing now?
No.
What they're doing now is a bunch of reruns of Friends, Mike and Molly, and Mom.
Wow.
Yes, and SpongeBob. I mean, SpongeBob's like mixed in there sometimes.
SpongeBob's still there.
But SpongeBob's still airing new episodes.
No,
too, so it's not
that
really included. But Nick at Night has just been completely overwhelmed with just basic sitcoms from the 90s. It's not even interesting.
Yeah, because like, when it was the 80s, that was such a different time, even in the aughts, as you were saying.
Yeah, the reason.
To do the 90s now, it just feels too recent.
The reason I'm concentrating on this so much to start off our little review of the show is that like they've come out with Nickelodeon stuff in the past, and it's been a long time story about how like they at one time they were having their own hotel chain and they would do tours across the world and stuff, and how that failed. And then a few years ago they did the Orange Years, which was a different docu-series that you can tell had a lot more production quality behind it than this series, because no offense, but this one was just an expose on interview style.
Yes.
This thing had like animation and stuff involved, and a lot of the creators from the original Nickelodeon program. Both had Drake Bell in them. But the Orange Years was much more educational, while this was more like gripping and supposed to depress you, but in a way that people are going to be entertained by, almost like they can't take their eyes away from it. And my question for you is, do you get that with episode 1 and 2? 3 and 4, or is it just episode 3 where you're like, it had episode 3 just been its own show or its own segment? Do you think that the rest of the show could have existed on its own?
Well, it's strange because they're all different. To answer your first question, you get the sadness throughout the whole show. And I should say in episode 5, when they're just kind of interviewing different people that were in the documentary, I consider episode 5 to be kind of different from
the series.
It's like
the Tiger King spinoffs.
That Tiger King episode is infamously bad. This was just kind of an update. But Giovanni Samuels, who's on all that, says that she doesn't want the people to watch this to think that their childhood should be traumatized. She says that they're fine now, so that's nice to at least hear. But episode 3 is when I feel like Drake Bell in this series, it's his own episode. There's no one else that they talk to that was in any different series. It's really about him, his dad, and Brian Peck, and kind of all the things that happened.
And it's
there.
Not about Dan Schneider really either.
Yeah, no, in fact Drake Bell is actually for Dan Schneider. He says once Brian Peck went to jail, Dan Schneider was actually the only person to comfort him. So it's strange that Drake Bell, who I feel is almost the main character of the series once episode 3 comes around, actually isn't anti-Dan Schneider at all. He's like, the only person who was there for me was Dan.
And there's no question that Dan Schneider, from Janet McCurdy's book, which you read.
Yes.
How would you compare the book to this? Do you think that this could have come about?
Well, they cover the book in episode 4.
That's why I'm asking. Do you think that the book led to this series?
It could have. The one thing I didn't like about it was they said that it speculated whenever Janet McCurdy in I'm Glad My Mom Died, when she was on the iCarly set, they said that it was speculated that it was Dan Schneider. It wasn't speculated at all. Like, what she did was put an invisible blanket on it. She doesn't refer to him by name, but she calls him the creator. They talk about how season 2, episode 7, the eye kiss, where Freddie and Sam kiss. If you read about what she had to go through, particularly on that episode, you're not going to be able to see it the same way.
As someone who has, like, I never really watched iCarly, but, like, what did they force the kids to do there?
Well, she even says that Dan Schneider, and they cover this in the show, would yell at them. He would sexually assault. She had to go through a lot of that just on all the productions that
without
she had to
getting
do.
Into gritty details, though. Was he just like, you guys have to kiss, and then like the cut would be bad, going and he'd just be like,
it,
kiss again?
Going
like
through it, yes, over and over and over again. It was actually both Nathan Kress and Janet McCurdy's first kiss that they were ever having, and they had to do it in front of a ton of people. She was not comfortable at all when she was working on iCarly. In fact, even at the end of that book, when Miranda Crossgrove says, look, I think that you should really come back for the revival, she made it clear. She was like, no.
It doesn't even sound like she came back for this documentary either.
They show a couple scenes of her on a podcast where she was talking about how she wasn't going to ever work in children's TV again.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the most that you get of her there. And I wish that they were able to get some more people. I think they even tried to reach out to Amanda Bynes for the show, because the Amanda show, they really cover in the first two episodes for the series. But I think I read something that said that she just didn't want to do it.
Amanda Bynes has had her own psychological issues. Like, she just got out of a conservatorship, and then there was an issue where she like had to flag down someone, and I think she was like naked outside or something. But like, yeah, child actors have always been known as a very vulnerable to the people around them.
Yes.
Even if their parents are there to try to prevent things from happening, like, there's always been a huge risk associated with getting into that field. And the ones that come through it okay are, yes, they'll be able to like have a ton of money and be set for life, but the chances of coming out that of that whole thing without scars or like some serious conflicts when it comes to how you understand how the world works, because like, think about how Hollywood is just a dog eat dog world.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, and so introducing that to like 5 to 10 year olds at such a young age, and then sexualizing them, and then doing all this other shit.
Well, it's why at the end of episode 4 they were able to get kind of everyone back, and every single actor, and it was either Giovanni Samuels or Raquel Baleo from the Amanda show, even said there's not a second that goes by when someone asks me if I should bring my kids into the TV world, where it's not automatic no. Like, mm-hmm. Every single person was obviously impacted by this.
Yeah, unless you're, I can't imagine, unless you use your nepotism to make sure that your kids are safe. You know, does that make sense?
And
if you get successful enough to be George Clooney, I'm sure he could have his kids there and they wouldn't ever deal with that type of, because they would be able to incubate them almost.
Well, what was crazy to me was that, and it happens everywhere. I'm sure Disney Channel had their own type of thing that happened. But I remember The Suite Life of Zack and Cody's kids, the Dylan and Cole Sprouse, I think years later, they wanted to come back and they wanted to make a sequel series to their original show. And I was like, the set for that must have been really good if they want to make a sequel series. Then I learned Brian Peck, when he got out of jail, went straight to Suite Life of Zack and Cody.
A little bit of time until he was fired, right?
But that was, still, he was convicted. He was a child predator, and still the fact that he was able to get work was just insane
to me.
So
I think that exposure right there is what really makes this series worth the watch, is
yes.
The Brian Peck story, and also that other weird pedophile.
They touch upon three people, Dan Schneider mostly.
But again, the biggest criticism, I feel like, it's gotten from people is that like Dan Schneider has been used to sell the program, and then they really were like, it wasn't him who was watching child pornography or hitting on
yes
kids.
Brian Peck was definitely the weirdest person. He got famous from being Pickle Boy, I think, on the Amanda show, or it might have been All That, and from that he was able to get into a lot of different his hands in a lot of different pies. The most shocking part to me was in episode 3 when Drake Bell is talking, and this is by the time that Drake Bell has already been assaulted, and Brian Peck was doing really weird things like calling him nonstop even when he was at his girlfriend's house, or going to every single one of his concerts. But then he says the thing that really broke him was when Brian Peck wanted to become the dad on Drake and Josh. That was the part where I was like, whoa. And that's the part where he had to call his mom and just kind of tell him everything that was going on.
Yeah, when you saw that part of it, you told me it reminded you a lot of A Friend in the Family.
Friend in the Family, yeah. And also A Teacher. I mean,
A Friend in the Family, though, I thought was way more, it resonated to me, because I remember when I watched that show and it was exposing the story of this whole, like, this family that had been taken advantage of by this manipulator mm-hmm. who had kidnapped the kid and then convinced the kid that she was to be, like, that the aliens needed them to mate and that she had to hate her parents or never talk to her father and stuff.
The comparisons are undeniable. I mean, literally, Brian Peck was going to Drake Josh and saying, your dad. Drake Bell. And was saying, your dad, he's taking money from you. And their relationship was basically cut off. There was a time where he was just staying at his mom's house because of how much he didn't trust his dad. And it's really hard to see Joe Bell, who was his dad, because they also interview him, just kind of crying throughout the episode, saying that, like, Brian Peck just entirely ruined their relationship.
It's strange, having just watched part of the Orange documentary thing that I was talking about, where they were really, really hyping up how great Nickelodeon was during the 80s and 90s and how it instigated, like, this mindset of for kids, by kids, you know, that type of thing. Mm-hmm. To then have this come in, and I realized that this was a little bit later on. This was post the SpongeBob movement. But at the same time, will it affect you watching any of these shows now?
Oh, yeah, there's no way it's not going to. Giovanna Samuels can say anything she wants, but it's like, there's no way I can watch Drake and Josh now or iCarly now if it was ever, say, on TV land and not just think about this series. Episodes 1-3 really focus on Dan Schneider, Brian Peck, and Jason Handy, but episode 4, it seemed like they even were kind of going against Nickelodeon,
yeah.
even though they tried to contact Nickelodeon, and it always
Mark Summers felt like he was bamboozled because he kind of spoke for Nickelodeon for the longest time. He was brought on for Double Dare. He seems like in the past he's been presented as a really cool guy because he was in that Orange documentary talking about the early years. And he has also been pretty outspoken that later on it has changed quite some, mm-hmm. even when they did bring back Double Dare, I think, at one point. But when it came to this series, he also got flack because he left once he realized it was just sort of a thing. I think he saw it as a hit piece.
Oh,
and originally, because they used some of his clips, I think, but he left before he was finished with all his interviews because he thought it was going to be all about Nickelodeon. And I kind of get that because of how much they have talked about Nickelodeon in other reviews and stuff. And when you hear that, like, okay, no, we're going to be taking the thing that you've earned your entire living on and stuff and just poking at the people in that. Now, had he realized what significance it would be for those who had, like, for kids like you who had watched it during that era, then maybe he would be rethinking it.
Virgil, it's not like they just went off on everybody. Like, Virgil Fabian, who was a director who was director for All That and The Amanda Show, like, they even said all the kids liked him. Like, he was a good person. There was people that they focused on that they said were really good role models. But, I mean, that's also covered in having to hear about how Jason Handy, you know, was sending pictures of him masturbating.
That guy seemed, almost just as bad, if not worse than that. Because I think I read that after he went to jail the first time, then he went to jail again after that. Like, he was,
I didn't even know
I
about
think
that.
So. Jason Handy?
Jason Handy, yeah.
Yeah, so it says that he's not going to get out of jail until August 28th, 2038. And I don't even think Peck is still in jail, right?
Yeah, Brian Peck, I think, is out. They only focus on Jason Handy in the second episode, at the beginning and at the very end of it. In fact, they really
He sounded like a psychopath.
Yeah, well, actually, like, on set, that was the thing about all of them. At different points, Dan Schneider may be the least, but they all seem so charismatic. In fact, Brian Peck, even when he had his court date, I think in 2004, after Drake Bell kind of came out, he had a ton of people, even from Hollywood. A lot of actors, a lot of production people, they even named them in the show.
I hate to compare it to the Catholic, like the clergy, but yes. Like there's like 5% of priests who end up being pedophiles, and it's like, if that can be translated over into the television landscape, it makes a heck of a lot of a reason why kids shows should concentrate less on actual kids being portrayed and not having them be as like cartoons and stuff. Like, Paw Patrol and Bluey are the biggest shows for kids right. Nowadays. You don't see anything besides maybe the Tyler Perry Show with young Dylan and stuff. But even that, like, I just don't think that the productions are going to be the same as they ever were.
Well, the first episode doesn't even really focus on the kids. You do get a couple interviews with them, but it actually focuses on the writers of The Amanda Show, Jenny Kilgan and Chrissy Stratton. Both mm-hmm. of them had to end up leaving just because Dan Schneider's, the way that he would interact with them. I mean, there's even one part where he asked one of them to pitch their sketch that they were just talking about, but act like they were being sodomized during the whole thing. I mean, it's just shocking behavior for someone who whenever I saw their logo pop up at the end of one of their TV shows, which was The Oven and Schneider's name coming out, I thought was always just a cool dude. He even got, in 2014, they cover like the Nickelodeon Lifetime Achievement Award or something like that.
Yeah, so he's sort of like a Chuck Lorre type person or Ryan Murphy, where right. they showrun a ton of things, and his name was very well known. But I don't see this as having determined whether or not he's going to work again in the industry. I think that was kind of settled in 2018.
Like, yeah, well,
the
yeah.
first allegations came out about him.
They started talking about how they thought that there's a possibility he might get his career back. A lot of people were scared about that. They brought that question up in episode 4. I think it's done. I don't think that there's any way. Like, this series absolutely put the final nail in the coffin, but I don't think there was any opportunity of him ever being able to come back.
So was your favorite episode favorite as in the most effective, I feel like, or the best produced episode, episode 3?
Episode 3 I thought was the best, but episode 4 I think I didn't have the most fun with, but I recognized the most of what they were talking about.
And did they just splice in a ton of clips that you were aware of? Like, or how many did you not know?
Really, when they
all
were
all that,
yeah,
I
all,
assume
all
you didn't
that.
See that.
The Amanda Bynes show, I do remember it being on, but I only remember one scene from that when I was really young, and that would have been a little before my time. So
again,
a lot of those,
because I hadn't watched Nickelodeon during this time. The first time I think I heard her name was when she was in like a 2006 movie, trying to make that jump from like kid actor into
right.
teen and films.
Yeah,
stuff.
They talk about that,
and she did. She played like a girl dressed up as a guy.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's actually kind of a well-known film now. It was based off the Shakespeare play. But yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. And then also Drake Bell tried to be in the superhero movie. He even talked about how he was trying to make that same jump similar to Amanda Bynes. And then that never really came through.
But Zendaya, that was a Disney show, wasn't it? The Casey Undercover one?
Casey Undercover, yeah.
Yeah. It seems like Disney has a better track record of kids jumping to bigger careers. Mm-hmm. That's weird, isn't it?
I also know that Dan Schneider, it's just shocking because I remember when Really Big Shrimp came out, which was the finale for the Drake and Josh show. I think years later, someone commented on it because they thought that Drake and Josh had been canceled. I think this was like on a Yahoo Answers, and Dan Schneider himself went on to Yahoo and like answered it for him, and they were like,
he seems like that type of dude.
Yeah,
he's stalking his own platforms and stuff. Well, I know he got in trouble because of his tweets. That was the original thing where he started talking about people's feet.
Yeah, because the show, especially in episode 4, they said the Me Too movement is really when it started to come out.
But yeah, it was interviews that were being done about Dan Schneider in 2018 that caused the showrunners to say, let's make a show out of this. And because of how well it's been received, or how popular it is, let's say, they say that they could continue it into other realms, possibly dealing with other ways that kids have been mistreated in other platforms of television.
I think it's an important message, yeah.
Yeah, it is, but it also makes me wonder whether or not the whole show needed to necessarily be there, or if they could have just consolidated it down to the Drake interview, because I feel like that's the most that it's come down to. So if they had only had episode 3 and 4, because again, when you talk about child predators, I feel like those are the bigger story. Dan Schneider stuff is nothing to like pass off, but it feels like almost like you don't want the show to be downplayed because of the fact that he was the forefront.
Well, you're not downplaying it. Like, Dan Schneider, I'm not sure if there was anything that actually came out against him being a predator, but
exactly,
the way that
he was never in jail. And
he was still doing creepy things. He was in a hot tub with Amanda Bynes when she was like 13, and both of them and he also, the way that he just sexualized a ton of teenagers, even in his shows, they show a lot of like cum shot jokes. That's how they refer to it and all that. There was even some racism because the people that were African-American on all that in the Amanda show felt like they were just kind of token for that. And I know that he tried to respond in that one YouTube interview, but they even said in episode 5, the people that were interviewed, they're like, yeah, we don't believe that at all.
Okay, I agree with you then. I just needed to push back because that was some of the criticism that I was reading about.
Ryan Peck was more shocking because I think people have had years now of Dan Schneider and kind of have understood, especially when they read I'm Glad My Mom Died or just read anything about it. I think they understand it. Ryan Peck, I knew nothing about.
Exactly, because his name hadn't been outed, but it was, I think, also pretty big in the show, from what I was reading, that like James Marsden and Taron Killam.
Yeah, they all wrote letters.
Not only wrote letters, but a lot of people, famous people, showed up at the trial. Can you imagine how intimidating
that
would
have
been?
Yeah, no, that's what Drake Bell talked about. He was like, I recognized a ton of people there. And even though they showed the letters, I think it's important to say that one of the investigators for the show said that they weren't sure if those people were actually at the trial. But I know even Alan Thicke wrote a letter as well.
Yeah, no, I'm caught up thinking about how, like, with Drake Bell, I know that he's had the legal issues himself with dealing with minors, right? Mm-hmm. Then you also look at, like, there was a Brian Peck video that was released recently post, I think, this coming out, where it showed him dealing with Leonardo DiCaprio as a kid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, Leo is, like, kind of infamous for dating people who are very young, never underage, I don't think, but like, and then I think, so it's just weird how I feel like even as a kid, if you're predisposed to thinking things are okay, flirting with people so much younger than you, it kind of like maybe even resonates in your mind. And I'm not trying to call anybody who like a pedophile or anything, but I am trying to point out like, it's just a gross system. And so if this series at all brings a light to that and finds a way to hopefully in the future veer that culture into something much more safe for kids, then I guess it will have done its duty. What is the rating number?
I am much like your Emergency NYC podcast.
I'm just
going to kind of refuse to rate it, but that doesn't mean I don't recommend the show. It's not for the faint of heart.
And it's also not for people who want a background education in Nickelodeon.
Right. The reason that I think really not like the show, but thought that it was so gripping is because I was growing up during that time. I was watching those shows.
Sure. But like, wouldn't you also be entertained if you found out like the makings of each one of those shows? That's the type of documentary series I like to watch. I don't like the exposés quite as much because they sometimes feel so word of mouth. And
I thought after episode one, especially with the subject matter, that I wasn't going to be able to, I would have to watch this in parts. But once episode one ended, I was just wanting to watch episode two. It's pretty fast to get through. I think every episode is 40 minutes. You can skip the final episode because in all honesty, I don't think that that even was supposed to
be
part
of
the
like,
series.
Yeah, it has its own little separate thing.
But overall, I definitely recommend the show, and it sends an important message.
All right. Thanks for listening. We'll see you on the next one. Hope you enjoyed this one. Bye.
Bye.